I teach all kinds of American politics. We'll try to stay on the subject today, which is really men and women and voting patterns. The rest of the week, I'm going to do a variety of related talks, and we will be talking about women as candidates for office, women serving in political office, whether 1992 was really the year of the woman, and all of those other things. But I think voting is a very good place to start, because voting is the sort of bottom line of participation in our system. And if we're not plugged in terms of participating at that real basic level, then it's unlikely that women would affect politics in other ways. So I don't want you to think, because today is about voting, that voting is all that matters in terms of female participation in politics. It really isn't, and I want you to know it's not, that I know that also. But that voting is the place where we all begin. And so I think it's a good beginning topic for us today. So let's just go around the room and find out maybe who's here, and if you have anything in particular, any particular reason why you wanted in this afternoon. You know, if somebody ran for governor in the room or something like that, I would like to know that. But if there is a reason, fine. If there's not a reason, that's fine too. But I just like to know a little bit who you are. So you want to start over here?
Yeah. My name is Matthew McDonald. I moved here from St. John in the U.S. Virgin Islands. I'm on staff here, and I'm a Maverick. I'd love to run for Congress someday.
Okay, good, good.
Figures.
We've got to find out about this voting block. We're not talking about a big block.
My name is Liz Einzig, and I'm on staff also, and no real reason.
Okay.
My name is Linda Lindman, and I'm Maverick. I work with Matt. And I don't really have a specific reason.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm Natalie Rasmussen.
Vicki Johnson. I'm on staff here in the kitchen, and I'm a woman.
So you want to know about this?
So
good. And Rosemary?
Roseanne.
Okay. And this is?
I'm Becky.
I'm just here visiting the weekend. I don't know why I'm here.
I didn't think you needed a reason. But there is one. That's fine. Yes.
I'm Carol Schneider.
Carol. Okay.
I'm a helper, and I'm on staff to interest in gender issues.
You're interested in gender issues. Good.
I'm Jenna Palverson. I live in Norway, and I want to catch up on what's going on here.
Okay. Great.
I'm Bill Giddings from Tacoma, and my son is in Washington, D.C., giving a paper at a national meeting on gender issues.
That's something you want something to say.
I'm Rashida Giddings, and my son's doing the same thing.
Same son. Yeah. Joe, is that right? Okay, and this is Mark, right?
I'm sorry, I came in late.
We're just saying name, and if there's any particular reason you're in the room. If there isn't, that's gone, but if there's any...
I'm Mark Edwards, and I wish I could be three or four places at once. It's a very interesting topic. Gender is a major category of analysis in historical work.
Okay, good.
Norma Anderson.
Good.
I'm Louis Sabatka. I have five daughters, so I'm
interested. All right.
I'm Anita Help. I'm interested.
Okay, good. Well, I'm glad you're all here, and I won't remember all your names. I may ask for them. This is what I do with my students. It's my habitual thing. Tell me your first name. So if I do that, I hope you won't mind. I'm doing some research that I would like you to help me with, and that relates to the topics that we're going to be talking about today. So I would like you to take a moment, if you don't mind, to fill out a very brief questionnaire that asks for some answers to questions that you may or may not have feelings about. If you can answer it, fine. If you want to skip it, that's fine also. This is to basically help me figure out what it is that various audiences know and think about women in politics as a starting point, and then we'll use that during the discussion today too. So I'm going to pass that out and get you busy right away. And just react quickly. I mean, it shouldn't be, don't take it like a test, all right? Don't agonize. Just sort of what you think you know or don't know, and then just leave other things blank. Don't worry about that. It's a front and back in compliance with paper conservation measures, so there is a back side. I have some pencils. about why we're going to do voting today. What is it about voting that makes political scientists salivate and study it over and over again and bring it up to date every 2 years? And I'd be interested in your reactions to that. I mean, what is it that's so critical about the act of voting? Why would people in my profession just put it under this microscope and examine it? Do you have any feelings about that, or anybody want to share anything?
What kind of television ads to put out?
All right, so we study it. That's an interesting reaction. We study it, and then the professionals use what we find out. That's definitely true. And so every time we generate more information about the act of voting, the people like this young man who want to run for office take that and say, aha, now I will know how to design my campaign. And of course, there are a lot of very serious moral and ethical issues that raises, because we believe in a democracy the act of voting ought to be basically what should be happening when we vote, and why, what is the point of it, what is it supposed to do or represent. Anybody?
Our small voice.
Okay, that's our voice. Yeah, as I wrote on the board, this really came out of a session on women's poetry this morning, where we were talking about finding your voice and getting your voice expressed. And of course, what I'm working with all this week and all these topics is how women do that politically, how they find their voice politically. And so the vote is the first place that you start to say, well, I can say something. This is where I can say something. We also know in political science that voting is connected to lots of other activities. And so once people start voting, they also start caring more about what happens, paying more attention. It kind of lures them into the system. It's sort of their first step into the system. And so this is one of the reasons that we spend so much time on it. In political science, we call it the lowest common denominator of political participation in a democracy. In other words, it's the beginning act. It's not really the end. It's the basic act. Okay, I wrote on the board to keep you and myself focused what I would like to accomplish in the session. And I want to first look at the act of voting and non-voting, because of course that's the first decision we all make. Are we going to vote or are we going to not vote? And that's that very basic entry into the system. And there have been some interesting facts about men and women on voting and non-voting. So that's kind of where we'll start. Then I thought we'd look a little bit at some other things that are related to voting. In other words, why, what causes people to vote and not vote, and that'll get us into some interesting differences about men and women, and also some things that have changed in our society in the last couple decades. The third thing then really was the grabber for the session, which is the gender gap. And the gender gap, of course, refers to some differences in the recent voting preferences of men and women. So we'll look at that. And then lastly, but probably most interesting and most important, is why do these things happen? What are the explanations for the differences that we have observed between men and women, and a lot of the change in this that we see going on in our society right now? And I hope a lot of you will feel very free at that point to share some of your own experiences, because I think we all have things to say about socialization and why we behave the way we do. Throughout the session, I'm going to be using some numbers. Political scientists like to quantify things. I always call this economist envy. They really all wish that they were economists or psychologists, perhaps, you know. And they have borrowed very heavily from the methodologies of particularly economics and psychology in terms of trying to quantify lots of things. I'm going to flash some of this on the screen and have you react to it rather than lecturing through a lot of data, because I just find that deadly dull. But we do need to look at some numbers to see what the patterns have been and to try to figure out what the historical dimensions are here and what's currently going on. One word about the current scene, and that is that I had some discussion with some of you before I started. A lot of people would like to talk about 1992 because it was a very interesting year, and it was the most recent year, and we had a lot of women candidates and so on. But I'm going to hold off on that a bit because we're doing a whole session on Friday that will be entirely about women and politics in 1992. All right. So what happened? There's a progression here, and I think that should come last. So you'll just have to stay tuned. I'm not going to let you get into that too much today. Let me start then with the basic data on voting and women. And let's, can somebody hit the light so that these numbers are a little more. I try to focus this. Can most of you read that? I had a lot of what we call teacher anxiety about this equipment and so on, so I was figuring around this. All right. Turn to a neighbor. Look at this a minute. Turn to a neighbor and see if the two of you can agree on something that you think is important in those numbers. All right? In other words, look at the data for a minute. Look at the data for a minute. Can you all see it? This was my attempt to save trees. I didn't want to bring all this and pass it out. Can you all see those numbers? Or can you get to where you can? And then just in a pair, if you will. See if you can talk for just a moment with someone else and see what's interesting to you about those numbers, rather than having me rattle on about this one, which I don't want to do. Can you all get paired? Or would you prefer to just do it generally? You want to, why don't you talk, see if you can do it in pairs, because you can see different things now that there are 50%. I'm going to leave them up there. Let's just quickly go around and see what you found as startling, or not even startling, interesting, something worth noting about those numbers. You ready to start over here, Congressperson?
Well, I was just thinking it was interesting. I didn't realize that there are more eligible women who voted than men. Okay, that was the first thing right off the bat. Also, I also thought it was interesting that in 1964, 71.9% of the men were voting, and it's dropped way down to 56.4. But with the women, it seems to stay a little bit more steady. It's dropped, but only like, 9%
or something. Okay, good. That is a trend that perhaps some of you are aware of, maybe others not, that voting generally in the population has declined, right? Mm-hmm. The percentage, voting has declined as a percentage. And so as we say, the voting rates have declined, and as the first name again?
Matthew
points out, it's declined for men and for women, a little less for women. And we might talk about that later when we get to our explanations about what's going on. Okay, good. Next, we find a lot of folks, myself included sometimes in my own journals, unable to deal with exactly what data are saying to us. So there's another objective there, and that's fine. Okay, were you paired with her? You're passing also? Or are you speaking?
I was struck by how confusing it is, because it looks like, okay, the percentage has gone down, but the numbers have gone up.
Okay, what would explain that?
Just population growth.
Right. And giving the vote to younger people, is that occurring here? Yes. Mm-hmm. Right?
Okay.
And that occurs in here too?
And it struck me how any kind of statistics are you need a lot more data to understand what the statistics mean.
All right. And that's right.
During the last election, there would be different polls that would come out every day, depending on what group was putting out the polls. They meant different things.
Right. And part of the job of my profession, when I'm in the classroom, part of the job is to help people do that. Exactly what you're saying. To take those the data and put them in some kind of context. And this is a value statement now, but my dividing line between good and bad political scientists is the bad ones just throw a lot of numbers at you, and that's it. It's supposed to be self-explanatory. You're supposed to figure it out. And the good ones help you figure it out. Okay, Roseanne? Yeah?
Well, along with some of the observations that already been made, I guess what I noticed that it was in 1980 that the percentage of women became more than the percentage of men. And it's continued.
Good for you. Good for you. So this is one of the things we wanted to see. What happened historically? The percentage of women voting became greater than the percentage of men voting. Notice how carefully you'd express those quantitative things to make them correct, right? So the percentage became greater in 1980. All right, 1980. And we'll say something else about that in a few minutes. Okay, over here.
Well, we talked about some of the same things. We pointed out that in the 84 election, when the percentage of women voting the highest was when we had a female vice president candidate, Geraldine Ferraro, whether that may have influenced that in the 88 election.
Certainly may have. And we talk later in the week, especially we do our session about women as candidates. We'll get into a lot of those kinds of questions about what happens when there's a woman on the ballot in various kinds of positions, especially. In general, Ferraro's presence on the ticket is not assumed to have caused a lot of voting one way or the other. And we'll talk some more about that when we talk about women as candidates. But it may have had a big draw in terms of turnout. See, not outcome, but turnout. Very good. Okay, next group in the back, did you want to share anything? None of this is forced. Okay. Yeah, it's hard when we start on one side. All the goodies get taken. All right, anybody have something else? Any group? Yes.
Minor, really. Everything that we noted, prior noted, it does seem to be a continuous progression where they went from, where female voting went from -4.9 up to a +1.9, stepped all the way through. Seems to be Republican and Democrat gender neutral.
We'll get to that,
on a constant basis.
Regardless of the winner, regardless of who won. That's correct. That is a correct interpretation of what we have here, in my opinion. I always thought that. But it seems to be true from these data that women just keep gradually voting a little more, a little more, a little more. And it does not seem, although the high point is the 84, as this group pointed out, it does not seem to be jumping wildly depending on the nature of the candidates or the race. So that would indicate what? That there's something going on in the society during this time that is causing this steady increase, and that when we get down to explaining these things or trying to, we'll come back to that point. But I would say that's very accurate. Okay, other things?
Yes. Yes. When I was looking at that, I was immediately struck by the fact that more women vote than men.
Yes, ever since.
And always.
Ever since 1964, all right?
Well,
here, we understand. Always in social science.
Unfortunately.
It's certainly always on this chart, right?
I was in college at the beginning of that chart as a sociology major, and I looked at that and I thought, male candidates don't speak to women's issues, or didn't at that time. But I remember, as a sociology major, seeing that statistically, in that time frame, over 90% of the married women voted exactly the same way their husbands. And I know women in my family and neighborhood that would take little papers to the polls with them.
That their husbands wrote out for them?
Yes, and my husband's mother was widowed, and when she remarried, she wrote to him from Eastern Washington and said, "I don't know what to do. Daddy was a Democrat and Bob is a Republican, and they always voted a straight ticket."
I know, I am very confused. Right. So she hasn't quite found her own voice yet, right?
Right.
She's very confused about where her voice was in that.
That's right.
And that's another issue, the influence of spouse and so on, that carries all through the issues of gender and politics, not only in voting, but also, again, as we'll see later in the week, in deciding to go into politics, to run for office, and so on. There's a very heavy spouse influence in women's political activity and indeed in political careers, which we'll come back to. All right. What we see, in summary, you saw it all. I didn't have to do any work. This is the way I like to teach. And the big messages from these data are, first of all, that ever since the 60s, more women have been voting than men in presidential elections. This is very surprising to most people. They assume that women didn't vote very much, or that men always were outweighing their vote and so on, some of those things I suggested on the questionnaire. Not true. It's not true. The women always did outnumber the men. But in terms of voting rate, in terms of voting turnout, women were fairly consistently lower than men. We have lots of other data on non-presidential elections that support the same thing. I'm just giving you the presidential because it makes the point. So it wasn't until 1980, as somebody spotted here, I think, that the percentage of women voting exceeded the percentage of men voting. And that has held true since 1980. So we have a kind of a dramatic, a gradual increase, but a dramatic switch in the pattern. When people first began studying this, they thought, well, women don't vote as much as men do, right, in terms of rate. And that's no longer true. That's why it's fun to study politics, because it's never finished. It's never cast in stone. Okay. There's one other point I want to make about this information that is not up there, and that has to do with differences between different racial and ethnic groups in terms of these patterns, which are interesting to look at but get complicated for a short session like this. But I want to talk for a minute especially about African Americans in terms of voting and non-voting. The lowest voting rate group for a long time in American politics was black women, African American women. And it was because so many of them lived in the South, and they were, of course, denied the vote in the South. And they also had very low rates of education, traditionally in the South. And so they brought the averages down. I mean, we're back to statistics again. It was a large number bringing the average down. When this increase began, when women started voting more, the most dramatic increases were among black women. In other words, women as a whole started voting more, as you pointed out, but the real takeoff group was African American women. And so the gap between black men and black women in terms of voting narrowed very fast, very rapidly. And I want to make that point now and then come back to it later when we talk about explanations, because there are some very interesting issues there about why that would be true. Yeah.
I think the state of Washington changed from selecting jury members from having voted as a way of doing it to who was registered to drive a car, uh-huh. because they were having difficulty finding racially balanced groups for juries, which I thought was sort of interesting. So there still must be, even though black women are voting in larger amounts, there still must
coming
be a
up.
Huge gap.
There's still a gap, but in terms of the changes going on, black women have really pulled up, and black women now vote at a higher rate than black men, and the difference is greater than these national averages. In other words, they're pulling further away from black men, and there are some, our sociologists that can help us when we get to talking about that in a little bit. Just a few points, and then we'll start, and then I'll give you another chart to work with, and we'll look at the gender gap. A few points about some other things that are related to voting that affect all this. And I took one off because it gives the answer away to one of my items on the questionnaire. I didn't want them to see it up there. These are things that political scientists have found really affect turnout. This word efficacy, we usually put political efficacy in front of it. That is the feeling that one can make a difference in something. And so people who have this feeling, yes, what I do matters, if I vote, it does make a difference, indeed, a feeling that I can cause something to happen, if you have a high feeling of that, you're going to vote, right? You say, because yes, because it does make a difference. People who are low on that kind of a dimension don't vote. People, obviously, and these things go together, people who pay attention, who read, who talk,
who are exposed to ideas about the election, much more apt to turn out and vote, right? The people who are just barraged with the TV ads, that doesn't really do it. It doesn't really do it. I mean, I'm not saying the ads don't matter at all, but it's the people who really pay attention and who have some exchange with others about politics that turn out to vote, and that's this factor. And then people who care about what happens, they seem very self-apparent to us, but a lot of people don't care about politics. They really don't care about it. I mean, they're into their daily lives and their own struggles and so on, and they really don't care. They think it doesn't matter, and they don't care. It doesn't touch them. Now, in the period we're looking at, especially in the 60s and 70s, men outranked women on both number one and three. On two, the genders were fairly even. So that explains part of that original gap we saw. Okay, why women didn't turn out? Well, they didn't feel very powerful. They didn't feel like it would really matter very much. They had a lower score here, and they tended to not care as much about the outcome as men did. They were about even on attention. The greatest narrower of the gap in terms of voting, though, is education. If we look at men and women of equal education, their voting rates are very, very similar, even all throughout this period. So the minute you got college educated, I tell this to my students in college, the minute you both have college education, this gap really goes away. And it always did, even in the 50s and 60s, if we controlled for education. If we look at men and women with an eighth grade education or a high school education, they would vote at about the same rates, you know, if we compare across education. So this is the greatest single factor in increasing, and that's because if you have more education, you also tend to go up on these other things. You feel more competent, you're more interested, you can follow what's going on, and so you're more apt to turn out. Yeah.
Well, if that's the case, and the percentage of women voting is greater, then that must mean the educational level among women is greater overall.
One factor by itself, though, doesn't explain the whole picture, okay? So if we control for education, they're about even. What's happened is that women have increased their education level a lot in this period of time.
Yeah.
The one by itself doesn't, you can't just take the one out because there are all these other factors. But it is the one that makes the gap go away. It makes the gap go away if you look at the voting rates. Okay. Any other questions about some of that introductory stuff, and then we'll get to what's going on with preference, which I think may be what some of you
came to these. Now this is a little more complicated. What you can do on the bottom, if you want to, is just look at one of these.
I think we can see it better if we get this out of the way.
Okay, you can feel free to do that.
Take the you can work with the top data, or you can work with the 80, 84, 88, which is where the gap first became very apparent to everybody. There were some gaps earlier, but just take a minute and do your peering thing again. See if you can find on the bottom, if you just want to deal with one of those poles, you see they're giving you all the different poles, and that just further complicates the chart. So if you want to just take one of those, that's fine.
It's going to use a half an hour
to figure out the chart. Trying to make it, to come up with a quicker technique, because if you start lecturing through it, it really takes forever. Okay, let me give you a definition here. A gender gap, as it's used in the general vernacular, right, is generally felt to exist if it's 4 or 5% or greater difference between the gender groups. All right, so if you see a pattern where there's certainly greater than 5% difference between men and women in an election,
political scientist will say, or journalist will say, certainly, there's a gender gap here. This is considered to be a sizable difference. Something is going on, right? Something is going on here. Let's start over here and see what you found. We'll just be a little more spotty about it. I won't put you all on the spot. What did you find interesting here? Anybody?
Yeah, we thought the women voted for Kennedy, and this is a surprise to us.
That's an old myth, right?
It's an old myth. That I lived through.
That's right, and you believe it too, right? Yeah. You believe it's just a great. There's two learnings in the room already. That's a success.
And women didn't vote for Carter either.
And women did not vote for Carter much.
The interest must have been down on the federal election because the percentages for voting.
Right.
Quite a bit.
Now, 1980, though, and tomorrow's class, which is about issues, we'll really get into some of this. What was going on in particular elections is very related to what the issues were. And we just can't do all that in one class. So we're just focusing on the actual gap here. Okay, anything else? Does anybody know anything else about the gaps?
The Bush,
where are you looking on the chart? No,
1988.
Okay.
The Bush, the gender gap is wider than for Dukakis.
ABC
are 7%.
Well, they're both 7%. You see, it's just reversing itself.
Reversed.
So, but it's a big one. It's a fairly big one. And actually, I don't want to get into all this, but actually it lessened during the campaign. It was greater than that at points in the campaign. It was quite great, and the Republicans did some very clever things to narrow it during the campaign. All right, other reactions to this?
If you look at almost any poll in any year for anything, men seem to vote as a block more than women do. Women seem to be much closer.
I see. That's very interesting. So the male vote tends to go for the winner, and the woman's vote tends to divide more evenly. That's a very interesting observation. Would indicate, for instance, that they're not going with their spouses as much, perhaps, because there is this difference, right?
Many of them don't have spouses.
And so they got to find their own voice because there's no one else to ask. We can't ask Sam because Sam has left us and we have to decide ourselves how to vote. Okay, good. Other reactions?
It looks like there's a gender gap in every, except for bottom, except for John Anderson.
Except for John Anderson. Yes, there were gender gaps in the 50s. Do you see them? If you look at the top, in the Eisenhower elections, right? Okay, Kennedy, there's not one. We'd say that's too close to call it a real gap, right? That's 3% difference, 2% difference, no big deal. Flat even on Nixon, right?
Pollsters are pretty good. All three of them are very close.
At the bottom, yes, there's high reliability between the polls, yes. There's reliability between the polls, okay?
In 68, was Wallace running against Nixon then?
Yeah.
That's why he could win with 43%?
Yes, that's right. In 72 also.
Who voted for Wallace?
I'm not prepared to handle that question today. I have no idea. That's a very good question.
It's a very good question.
I would imagine.
McGovern
was 72, not.
Well, Wallace was a third party candidate.
In both of those years.
Just 43% of each.
Yeah,
it's not a majority, right?
Like this year.
Humphrey.
So you have a third candidate.
Humphrey was the third candidate.
Okay, all right. So we conclude from this, that while there was a gap, there have been gender gaps previous to 1980. The 50s elections are interesting that way, but the gender gap seems to have established itself in 1980 and not gone away. All right, and that is what is making it very interesting to political scientists and to candidates, of course, because as Matthew pointed out earlier, the candidates, you know, pour over these data and use them. Okay. Any other reactions that anybody wants to get out there? Okay, let's go back to this. Now, there are similar data. I don't think we're going to have time, but there are similar data to these on party preference. If I flashed up for you, and maybe afterwards if anybody wants to stay around, but we have data on the party identification of men and women, and it supports this right down the line, that consistently through this period in the 80s, women have been more apt to say, I'm a Democrat, than men are. Okay, so the Democratic preference of women sort of seeps in and hits in 1980 for reasons we'll talk about tomorrow, the issues of 1980, the candidates, and so on, and then it doesn't go away. It does not go away. It stays there throughout the period. Now, in campaigns, it goes up and down. The size of the gap goes up and down. But it stays as a factor. And in our line of work in politics, anything that lasts through 12 years or so, that's a pattern for us. I mean, maybe not for the historians, but for politicians.
That was very noticeable on the Mondale line.
And there are reasons in these candidates, but it may also be that the candidates were picked because people saw these trends developing too. I mean, it's very hard to separate out cause and effect on that. Did the Democrats nominate sort of pro-women candidates on purpose because they saw this developing? And again, later in the week we'll have more chances to talk about that. I want to get to, we have the lights on? Two more things I want to do, actually. It goes fast. I want us to talk a little bit about what we have suspected and what people in political science are now saying are the causes or the explanations. Now, all of you who've studied social science know that explanations are tentative, they are temporary, not permanent, so nothing that I say should be taken as absolute fixed reality. But there are theories that people have worked with. In the 1960s and early 70s, the primary explanation offered for these differences was that boys are socialized differently than girls. And there were, of course, this is not news to most people in the room. Boys indeed are socialized differently in our society than girls are. And there was some research to back this up, and it tended to indicate that young girls, starting as early as fourth grade, were not encouraged to think of themselves as political, to think of themselves as leaders, to get interested in political types of questions and debates. And furthermore, it was not polite to argue about these very controversial things. It was not ladylike. And all of this sends this message, which leads to low efficacy, by the way, that, you know, girls don't really do this. Even in the 60s, when I studied political science, I was still a little bit of a freak, particularly in graduate school. I was considered very odd for doing this. In the 1970s, and as the women's movement got more widespread in the society and there was more thinking and writing and research on gender issues, a second explanation was developed that had quite a bit of convincing evidence behind it, suggesting that what happened to women as adults may explain more about their political activity than what happened to them in childhood. What are some of the things that might happen to women as adults that would affect their interest, involvement, starting to vote, and so on? Yes, sir.
Well, the Journal had an article 3 days ago about gender gap, only they were talking about a gender gap.
All right.
In all fields, exactly. Across the field.
Exactly right. And so one of the big new theses in this field now is, as women enter the work world, they encounter realities that make them care more about outcomes. All right, so if we go back to that third factor there, if you go out and you are paid less than they are paid for the same work, which all of you obviously know is still the case, that makes you care about public policy and decisions in a more personal kind of way. So it's no longer I'm just worried about things that touch my children, I'm also worried about these structural policy questions in a different way. So, yes?
And not only is it income, but it's also opportunities for advancement.
Okay, how would that work? How would that work, Susan? You mean feeling you don't have opportunities, or?
I think that that's something that motivated people, probably, and it been the recognition of the limitations for employment.
Okay. All right.
What about things in the party platform relating to the candidate? Things like child care and abortion issues and things like that. It seems like those, I don't remember at least those kinds of issues being addressed.
When
I was in school, you know, in the early 60s.
That's because they weren't.
They weren't.
They weren't addressed and they weren't issues. That's right. They weren't issues and they weren't addressed.
People worry a lot about foreign policy and things like that.
Economics, wars, figures.
That's right. And all of this, you know, is very true. That the issues were not expressed in ways that reached women. And so again, we had this lower caring, lower feeling of making a difference. What does this matter to me anyway? They're not thinking about my reality.
My mother used to say, I let Daddy take care of the big things and I take care of the little things. Like he decides who's going to be president, who's going to, you know, whether we're going to war, and I decide what kind of house we're going to buy or car.
Exactly. Other things? Now, the obvious one is the clue I gave you earlier when we talked about this, which is education. And so if we look at the changes in women going on to go to college particularly, that obviously is going to bring them up, and that gives them the tools, and that makes them feel more effective, and there we go, and they're going to get out there and start to...
How have those numbers changed?
The numbers on education. You mean the numbers of women going on to school?
College, yeah.
I can't give you trend on that, but I know that it is now roughly even, male-female.
Okay. But was it a lot less then?
Finishing was a lot less.
Yeah.
Drawing might have
been. Finishing periods of divorce is a lot more. So
okay.
That was impacted.
Okay. Right. Yeah, there are three things that have been clearly identified in these adult experiences. One is higher education, okay? The second is the occupational professional experiences that you're all suggesting, which make women not only angry or you know, getting involved because they're angry, but also expose women in the workplace to a lot more conversation about these things. And so it becomes possible for us to go and have coffee and talk about what this healthcare package ought to look like anyway for our workplace, right? And that entices, again, people into political involvement in a new kind of way. And then the third thing is the role of women changed in terms of provider, head of household, or equal head of household, and all of that puts new responsibility on, which then brings those issues to the forefront, particularly the ones that you're mentioning, like child care and so on, which then become very, very critical political issues. Okay. The preferences of women for Democratic candidates, which we saw here, are very much related to issue concerns that they have. They dovetail with issues and so on. And tomorrow, we're going to look at all of that. In other words, what is the difference between men and women on issues? And again, I'm going to look at it over several decades because this is not new stuff. I'm feeling like we're close to out of time, and I want you to do a questionnaire for me as an ending. So I'm going to ask you to do that. And then anyone who would like to stay around for more conversation, I'm very willing to do that also. But I'm conscious we are trying very hard to be good about staying to 1 hour. So I'd like you to do the questionnaire again. And then I hope that some of you will want to talk more about some of these things later in the week. And I appreciate you all coming. You have a very lively and interested group.